there, and welcome to another episode of Horse Sense, a show for the thinking horse person. At Horse Sense, we give you practical, relevant, up-to-date, and even inspirational information to enrich your horsing life. This show is brought to you by the Equine Care Clinic, a clinic dedicated to the care of sick or injured horses when their owners aren't able to. Check out the site at equinecareclinic.com. I'm your host, Amanda Edwards, and this week we are talking to Tanya Mitten of Equestrian Success and Mindset. I first came across Tanya at a seminar hosted by our adult riding club and took away information from that session that really made a difference to my riding. I was riding a quite scary horse at the time. Tanya's an accomplished rider in her own right, competing successfully as a young show jump rider in Germany. Subsequently, she has become a riding coach and trainer, and she talks about when she could see that riders needed a different approach to overcome their fears and self-limiting beliefs to get the results they wanted. Tanya's a coach for the Paralympic Dressage Squad and works with many riders at all levels to help them achieve their goals. If you've ever come out of a dressage arena, show ring, or ever any other comp wondering what on earth went wrong, you're going to love this. Enjoy.
Hi, Tanya, and welcome to Horse Sense. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be there.
It's fantastic. I'm very happy to hear from you because I know that our listeners are going to be really interested in what you've got to talk about. Perhaps you can tell our listeners what you do and, well, who you are and what you do, and how did you get to be a mindset coach?
Yeah, look, it's sort of a bit of a, it certainly has evolved over time. Basically, sort of what I'm doing is coaching with riders on, you know, their mindset, basically how their thinking affects their riding and also their horses. And also riding position coaching. So, you know, in my lessons, I focus mainly on the rider position, their seat, and again, the influence that the seat has on the horse. And yeah, look, how did I get to become a mindset coach? It's, I guess, one of those, I don't know, let's call it defining moments that we all have from time to time, was probably about 10 years ago when I was teaching at a riding club. It was down in Victoria, and I came to the club. It was just a normal rally day, and I got there probably half an hour before the lesson started. And in those, in that half an hour, I had three people come up to me, and they told me all the things they couldn't do. They told me all the problems that they, you know, had been having for so long. And they basically told me all the things that were going to go wrong in the lesson that hadn't even started.
that sounds like about most of the adult riding class.
Look, I'm sure we've all done it, and I'm sure, you know, every coach out there has, you know, their story where they had the same thing happen. And I can't tell you what was different on that particular day, but I remember driving home at the end of the day, and I said to my husband when I got home, look, I have to change something. You know, I either have to find a better way of teaching or I need to stop teaching. And, you know, it basically, I guess it was that realization for me that I said, there's such a small, you know, a short time frame that I have with riders, sometimes in a group environment, you know, when they are already sitting on their horse. And I sort of realized that there was really, I was very limited in what I could do in that time and how I could ride, how I could help riders, particularly if they've had, say, bad experiences, you know, in the past, or they were struggling with something. And I really sort of identified that as riders, we get on the horse with the perception that is, you know, coming from our past experiences, And that often determines the outcomes that we get.
That's very true. I mean, they always used to tell us, if you focus on the ground, stop looking at the ground. If you focus on the ground, that's where you'll end up.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, I often say to riders now, you know, be careful what you wish for, because you might just get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very powerful, isn't it? So, you've been quite a successful rider yourself over the years, haven't you?
Well, look, I've done a lot of competing. I've never went sort of to the top. My main competition discipline was always show jumping, and I sort of got up to, you know, I was quite successful as a young rider over in Germany for a short period of time, and I sort of got up to probably a B grade level sort of in Australia. But yeah, so, you know, I've done a fair bit without going to the top, as I said. But honestly, I'm looking back at it now as a coach and as a trainer. I've always looked at myself and I know that I'm not a talented rider. I never have been. Now, you know, like most riders, I beat myself up over that for a little while, but I'm now really sort of, I guess I see the blessing, because by not being a talented rider, I know that everything that I know, I had to learn.
And you had to work for.
Yeah, I had to work for, and I had to spend time figuring out all of the things that I needed, you know, to learn. So I think from a training and a coach's perspective now, it's much easier coaching riders when you had to go through the, you know, the hard yards, if you like. Because as nice as it is when someone is talented, it's very difficult sometimes to coach other riders who aren't talented, because we don't really appreciate what we know, and it's often harder to put it into words.
I think that's actually a very good point. And so what you've now done is added NLP to your toolkit as a riding instructor, which I think's absolutely inspired, because I think the other thing about it too is a lot of the people that are riding now are riding around their work commitments. They're doing it because they love it and they want to get out there, but they are afraid because they haven't got as many, they're not riding several hours a day. Like when I was a kid, I'd ride every day, 2 or 3 hours, but now I can't do that. So it's, I think that what you've done is taken that to a whole new level. You also now work with, do you still work with the para squad and the dressage?
Yeah, I work with the high performance squad for the para and dressage riders.
Yeah, fantastic. So that must be incredibly rewarding.
Oh, look, it is. And I mean, you know, the people that I've met have been fantastic. They're very supportive. You know, there's always inspirational stories out there, you know, from both camps. And, you know, I've learned so much from working with, you know, all kinds of riders at different levels, you know, from the para riders, their experiences that they've shared with me. It's mind-blowing, and I'm absolutely in awe of, you know, what they're doing, how they're doing it. And I mean, they're athletes. They're world-class athletes who work so hard. The achievements that they have are outstanding, and I think in Australia we've got such a strong you know, para group, which is really exciting for Rio.
I think we've actually got a very good chance in Rio.
I think
so
too.
Para group. Yeah, it's quite strong. So so that's really, you've got a lot of experience behind you now and a lot of runs on the board. So for listeners that are listening, you know, to people that are riders that are listening today, what would be the common problems you see?
The common problem, I think, for most riders, and, you know, that's on all levels really, is often a limited belief in their own abilities. And I think, you know, that's probably something that is not, you know, obviously it's not just in riding, you know, a lot of people have doubts in themselves. you know, most people find it very easy to see all the qualities in other people, like their friends, their kids, their partners. But most people sort of struggling, you know, seeing their own qualities. And, you know, often it's easier for a lot of people to put themselves down rather than to actually see, you know, the abilities that they have. So I would say that's probably, as a whole, what most people struggle with, is believing in themselves enough, trusting their own gut feeling, and, you know, seeing the potential that they have.
Yeah, I think we, as you said before, you know, you sort of give yourself a hard time over the things you didn't do right, but don't celebrate the things that we do do right. So one of the other, I mean, I know that I see a lot of people who are absolutely, and I've got to take my hat off to them, they're absolutely terrified, but they get on anyway because they really want to do it.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I think every horse rider would agree that there's something very addictive about horses.
And what is that?
Yeah, what is that? It's a good question. I think, you know, to me, I often say to people that, you know, even though I love the training aspect and, you know, I love working with riders to help them improve their, you know, their performance and their skill, what I love even more is the personal development that each and every rider gets from their horses. And, you know, maybe that's that mystical part about horses. Maybe that's what keeps us hooked. Because, you know, we learn so much about ourselves by interacting and, you know, working and dealing with horses, because they're so honest, they're so in the moment. Their feedback is just, you know, pretty accurate at, you know, at the time when things happen, but also they're so forgiving.
I think you've nailed it, actually. I think that's absolutely right.
And I think, you know, we can learn so much from our horses, and particularly in the you know, forgiveness department. Because, you know, again, as human beings, we have a tendency of sort of holding on to the experiences that we've had. And, you know, we hold on to past experiences. We predict by our past experiences of what's going to happen down the track. And we can often sort of, you know, hold a grudge towards someone by something that they've sometimes done, you know, months ago or years ago. And I find, like, what happens with horses is that if we have the right intent, that means, you know, if we're not abusing a horse, but we come from the intent of wanting to do the right thing, wanting to learn, wanting to improve, and we get it wrong, you know, we stuff up, you know, we do one thing, but we actually mean something else. Horses, yeah, just forgive the moment we get it right.
And I think they also, it's that congruence of action and thought, they seem to somehow know the intent.
Yeah. And I think, you know, because we know that horses don't have a frontal lobe, so they don't have the ability to, you know, rationally think about things. But the energy is something that is so important for horses. You know, horses feel the energy around them, and they respond accordingly. And, you know, again, what we can learn from our horses is the things we do and the intent we do them with create a very powerful energy. So, you know, if we're schooling a horse, or if we are working with a horse, then our intent is to improve the horse. Our intent is to learn, to do the right thing. You know, even to the point of our intent is to get the horse to relax and feel safe. It affects our energy. And horses pick up on that. And, you know, I often sort of say to people, you know, there's this old saying, and I'm sure we've all experienced it at some point. If you walk into a room where two people just had a massive argument and they stop talking the moment you walk in, you know, you feel something. And you feel kind of an energy, you feel an uncomfortableness that you say, I just want to look for the door and I'm going to find, you know, an excuse and I want to get out. Now, horses are so much more sensitive to energy than we are. And the stuff that goes on in our head, you know, sometimes that, you know, the stuff that we beat ourselves up with if something has gone wrong 2 weeks ago, or if we've just had an argument with our partner, or if we've had a really busy day at work and someone gave us a hard time. You know, whenever we have this stuff going on in our mind, that feels to the horse the same way as us walking into a room with someone having had an argument. And this is, again, where the personal development comes in, because horses respond to our tension with resistance. So, you know, how often have you sat on a horse that all of a sudden you felt the horse like sort of, you know, get all tense and bunch up and put the head up and get up tight and, you know, start jogging on the spot? You know, we've all had that. So, you know, learning to relax and learning to breathe out and learning to have a good intent focusing on the real outcomes that we want to achieve. Like, you know, I want to have a good ride. I want to have fun. I want to be safe. I want this to be enjoyable. I want to learn something. All of that creates a very different energy.
It absolutely does. And so that's, it's flipping it. Really, it's actually becoming aware of your own thoughts too, isn't it?
Yes. That's where the mindset, you know, kind of coaching comes in, that becoming more consciously aware of what really goes on in our mind, how we feel, what we're focusing on, and you know, allowing horses to give us feedback.
And sometimes that feeds out so not so positive if you're going all like, I tend to, and in fact, I think this is what I enjoy about being around horses, is I know, as I've had some of that feedback, that I can be all over the place. And so if I've learned to focus on what I'm doing and calm down and be with the horse, and then the horse is cool, you know. But so what are some of the strategies, like, say if you've got, okay, let's go with that scenario that you put up before. Go to Adult Riding Club. You've had a really busy week. It's Saturday morning. You couldn't catch the horse, had trouble getting it on the float. You got to the lesson. You're running a bit late. You've tacked him up. You get into your lesson, and what does Tanya do?
Well, Tanya is first of all going to ask you, where do you feel your breath right now?
I'm bowed up in my throat.
and that's probably 95% of the time the answer that I get.
Okay, so I've been there, everyone. Ask me how I know.
So, you know, this is where I always start a lesson.
Okay, good, yeah.
In asking people, you know, go through your body and feel where your breath is, and then point to the part of your body where your breath is, so I know as well.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So what that does, you know, it's kind of two-way feedback. First of all, you know, the rider is telling me, I'm feeling it in my throat, but as they're saying that out loud and as they're pointing to their throat, they become very aware of it. Because, you know, with breathing, for example, which, you know, relaxation is breathing, or a big part of relaxation is breathing. And, you know, in reality, I mean, we're all breathing. You know, we wouldn't be here if we wouldn't breathe. So
not for very long.
Not for very long, exactly. So breathing is obviously something that we do automatically. So if you say to a rider, and you might be able to relate to that, you know, if you have an instructor, who says to you, you are tense, breathe out, you know, remember to breathe. You know, what's going to happen? Like, generally speaking, we don't do what we're told. We go, yeah, thanks for letting me know. I'm breathing. And then most people's response, if they are already tense, their response to someone reminding them to breathe is they take a really big breath in and then it stops again. So,
catch it.
Yeah. So, you know, if you think about, and for your listeners, you know, while they listen to this, you know, take a really big breath in and feel what happens. You know, where does your breath go? You'll find that a big breath in brings your breath up high. So we're kind of then keeping it stuck up in the sternum area and in the chest area.
Which then makes your whole body tense and tight.
Exactly. So the key to breathing is to breathe out. So, you know, when someone comes on the scenario that you've just explained, you know, comes to writing club and they've been all over the place and rushing, and they tell me that, you know, oh, my breath is up in my throat, I say to them, okay, so where your breath is now is up in your throat. Where you want your breath to be is somewhere around or ideally below the belly button. So I give them a visual concept of where their breath is and where we want it to go. And then I say to them, okay, so, you know, what do you have to do to let your breath go down into your belly button or below? And then, you know, people give me feedback. So they give me their version of relaxing. And some may say, oh, I have to relax my shoulders. Or, you know, I have to stop thinking about all the stuff that goes on in my mind right now. Or they might say, oh, I just need to relax. I just need to take a breath out. And I go, okay, let's start with that. So the relaxation and breathing is always the first sort of step, if you like, the first technique that I go through in a lesson.
And then that's pretty simple. Anybody can do that.
Absolutely. And it is important that it is simple, because horses then give us feedback again. So the cool thing is that when a rider is starting to breathe out and is dropping their breath down, horses start to respond to it. So what you commonly see is that, you know, a horse starts to drop their pole. They start to breathe out as well. They take a big breath, like a big sort of sigh. Their strides get bigger. Their ears start to go floppy. And the amount of people that have said to me in that instance, oh, my God, I've never heard my horse breathe out like that. And they go, my horse never breathes out normally. It's always tense. And I said to them, well, how often do you breathe out? And they go, oh, yeah, maybe good point.
Isn't that amazing? I've seen this time and time again, where if you watch your horse, they are actually doing what you're doing, because they're completely somatic. They completely work off movement and energy. And it's I think that's amazing. And how you would see that a lot, I would guess, using these techniques. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's
very cool.
The beautiful thing is, like, that is at all levels of riders. And that is, you know, not something that's discipline specific. So, you know, that to me is one of our main foundations in riding. And, you know, again, like, when you think, I mean, you know, in the time that we're living in now, you know, people are always busy. You know, I mean, stress is one of our number one, you know, killers, if you like. And, you know, when you think, you know, what is one of the signals of stress? You know, it's shallow breathing. So, you know, if we can just get people to become more aware of their breathing, and we can teach them through the riding to breathe more deeply and breathe through their tummy, I mean, we know that that is improving their riding and their connection in relationship with the horse. But even more importantly, if they take that on board, how much of a difference does that make in their overall life? You know, if that's their health, their family, how they deal with stuff at work, you know. So this is that personal development side that I spoke about earlier, where, you know, kind of improving your riding becomes the side effect of it. And that's a pretty cool thing.
It is a great thing. And I would have to agree that that's, and you might be right, that's why you get addicted to horses, because they make you feel good when you start to do this, and they are giving you that reflection. So, all right, so we've got the breathing under control. What's our next sort of step?
In a lesson situation, when we've got the breathing established and the horse has started to breathe and reflect that, you know, that the rider is more relaxed by then becoming more relaxed, from a rider position aspect, I then go through sort of stabilizing their body. So I work on stabilizing and balancing their upper body, getting them to engage their core, getting them to start moving their pelvis and becoming more supple in the pelvis so that they can lift their pubic bone and sit more on their seat bones, relaxing their thighs. You know, most riders ride with their handbrake on and don't realize it. So, you know, basically sort of going step by step, following kind of a bit of a system that I've developed for, you know, quite a long time now, to get their rider position in the right place. So from a mindset point of view, when I've got someone sitting on the horse and they're in a lesson, I do use visualization quite a lot, where if I see someone is getting tense, or they've told me about a bad experience that they've had in the past, I get them to start visualizing some of the things that they are either a little bit scared of, or something that's a bit outside their comfort zone and they feel a bit nervous about. I generally get them on the horse into their comfort zone. So let's say if they've had a bad experience with canter, but they feel really comfortable in the trot, I get them in their comfort zone, which is in the trot. I then talk to them about, you know, what we are going to do in terms of, you know, let's just think about, don't do it, but think about a canter transition when you get to your next corner. So while I get them to start kind of visualizing and thinking about doing something they're a bit nervous about, I then watch the horse's response and I watch their body language while they're just thinking about it. And the cool thing with the body is that we know that our body and mind are connected. So if someone is visualizing or thinking about doing something, their body automatically starts to respond. So if someone says, they've had a bad experience in canter, and I get them relaxing in the trot, and I see that the horse is relaxed, and I see that their breath is down because their shoulders are relaxed and the horse has got floppy ears and is breathing. And I say to them, okay, let's just, you know, stay in a trot, but I want you to think about and imagine when you get to the next corner that you're going to pick up a canter. And often what happens is they get to the corner and I can see a change in their position and in the horse. So their shoulders might come up because their breath has come up. The horse all of a sudden...
So they stop breathing.
Yeah. So just by the pure thought of doing something they're a little bit worried about or they had a bad experience with, their body instantly starts to show it up. So then I work with that visualization until I can keep the same body language like I had in the trot where they felt comfortable before I ask them to actually go into a canter.
How does that play out then? Like, what do people say when you get that, you know, and how does it feel for them?
Generally, the feedback that I get is quite a big sort of aha moment, if you like, of basically a realization of saying, gosh, I didn't realize that I was tensing up the moment I even thought about cantering. Or, you know, I thought that I was relaxed, but clearly now that we've spent the last half an hour trying to get my breath down there and it's still only mid-chest, I'm not as relaxed as I thought I was.
Yeah, it's just becoming very, very conscious of your own body, because we actually don't pay much attention. Horses are all about where their body is and how it moves, but we're not.
Yeah. And I think because most of our, training has been about improving the horse. And, you know, the focus in most riders' mind while they're riding is how their horse is going. Where I guess I come from the point of saying, you know, let's just focus on you and use the horse's feedback. You know, focus on you, what you think, what you do, how your body feels, where your breath is, and then check in with the horse and go, and how do you feel about this? Because they let us know.
And so this will be part of the reason why when we get into the dressage arena and try and do a dressage test, we start to not breathe and get quite tense. And so we might have done a beautiful test out on the warm-up arena, but we get into the arena and the judge is watching us and it all goes to crap.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, how many riders do you know that have exactly that experience?
One or two.
Yes. And look, it's in that sort of case, I find it's really helpful to do off the horse coaching session, because often what happens in those scenarios is that, you know, this is where beliefs come in. And, you know, we all have kind of a picture and a perception of who we are. And with that coming, you know, our beliefs. So, you know, someone might see themselves as, you know, a very good dressage rider who is very successful and very capable and very talented up to medium level. Someone else sort of might say, oh, you know, I'm short. I've got, you know, short legs. You know, I'm never going to be one of those, you know, really tall, slim, gorgeous, long-legged riders, and therefore I can't get the same result as they do. So we all have a picture of ourselves that kind of describes to us who we are, you know, what we can do, what we can't do, what we're good at, what we're not so good at. And that has a huge effect on how we behave and how we respond in certain situations. So, you know, and it's a classical example where riders often tell me, you know, at home when there's no one around, you know, they ride their best tests. The moment they go out, say, you know, to a competition or where there are people who are watching them, they feel judged.
Well, because we are being judged, Daniel.
Yeah, but that's where, you know, if you ask a judge sits there and he or she is just giving you feedback. You know, I mean,
exactly.
a judge has a sheet of paper in front of them and it basically says, you know, here is an ideal mark, which is a 10 out of 10. If you give any less than a 10, you have to tell the rider, you have to give them a reason why they didn't get a 10. And that's basically the reason why, as a whole, dressage tests always read negative. Because the judge has to tell you, you know, why they gave you a 7, not a 10. Because otherwise, you know, if they say, beautiful downward transition, fantastic, rider said really well, horse was really relaxed, 6.
6.
You will go, excuse me, you know, you've just told me that was beautiful, everything was perfect, that should be a 10, why did I get a 6? So they have to give you a reason, and they also have to give you something to improve on. For a lot of people, that becomes quite confrontational, and then their own personal stuff comes in. And, you know, again, this often has got nothing to do with horses. You know, we collect our stuff, we create our stuff, generally sort of in our early teenage years, you know, when we start to become really aware of the environment and the people around us, what they say. We evaluate what they say, we take it on, and then we look for proof. So, you know, if someone says to us, gosh, you've got short legs, and someone else sort of says, oh, God, you know, you can't run that as fast as someone else, you know, they've got much longer legs than you have. Or something like that, you know, out of that can very easily come a belief, you know, I've got short legs. So then we hear, oh, you know, that horse is too big for you, you should ride something smaller. With that then can come an interpretation of, oh, you know, I'm not good enough to ride that big horse. I need to ride something smaller because my legs are too short.
So we do build up a whole lot of beliefs and things that then impact us even before. So we're almost taking a whole luggage carriage with us into
Absolutely.
The dressage arena.
Absolutely. And, you know, often that luggage is being triggered the moment there are other people around us.
I read another piece of research just recently where if we are being watched, these psychologists did some testing around the body and what our bodily response was, and that our fine motor skills start to depart the minute we start getting watched do something. And so in terms of the horse, we're putting more pressure on the reins, we're putting more pressure around the rib cage, and we do all of those sorts of things as well, which kind of impacts too. So, but probably because our stuff has just arrived at
Absolutely. And when you think, you know, when your stuff has arrived and comes up, what happens to your breath?
Yeah.
Your breath comes up. So then that impacts your fine motor skills because you start to tense up muscles. So then all of a sudden you start to become rigid. You start to become, you know, tense and tight. So, you know, you can't move your body as subtly as it was before, and the horse responds to it.
So in terms of like visualizing a test where it's going well in your head, and continually manifesting that, and breathing, those could be two very simple, they're simple to say, not so easy to do, but they are two fairly easy to apply strategies, aren't they?
Absolutely. And that's something that you can do sort of, you know, by yourself while you're in the car or in the float, you know, before you get on your horse.
Yeah. So the question I was going to come back to, when you were talking about the body position and getting people to relax their, you know, get their position right, it's always intrigued me when I watch the Paralympians, who I just think are phenomenal, but the horses seem to work with their abilities and they don't worry, even though because of some of their physical issues, they kind of might have, you know, if they're a paraplegic, for example, their legs aren't doing, you know, they're not having that contact. So how do you interpret, like having watched that and worked with those guys, how do you see that and the relationship with the horse? Because, you know, I've got one leg quite a bit shorter than the other. And so trainers have said to me, oh, that's going to cause your horse to be imbalanced and all that sort of stuff. But I just wonder about how real that is and what your thoughts are.
Look, basically a lot of work goes into this behind closed doors, if you like. You know, like when we watch some of those riders, particularly some of the squad riders that then go on and, you know, they represent Australia in teams and championships, the amount of work that those riders put in is incredible. And also, you know, their horses. So, you know, you need to, and this is outside para as well, you know, you always need to match the horse and rider. I think that goes for everyone. So, you know, if that is someone who has a disability or who has limitations, or if that is an able-bodied rider who just hasn't got the experience, or, you know, who's been off riding for 10 years while, you know, they were raising their family. I think it always starts with making sure that you match the horse and rider and that they go well together. Then, I mean, one massive big part is, you know, the rider's ability to be as physically able as possible. Now, you know, I think, you know, most of us take our body for granted, and therefore we can get slack in actually working on ourselves. And what I mean with that is, you know, just simple things like, you know, doing fitness training, doing stretches, you know, making sure that our body stays supple, you know, working with physiotherapists, working with chiropractors, you know, having, you know, massage therapy to basically make sure that your body functions the best it can with what it has. And, you know, that is not just for disabilities, that's also, you know, age. You know, some illnesses that might make us sort of stiffer or slightly uneven. So that's a huge part. And, I mean, para riders are, look, honestly, they're, how much most of those riders are putting into their training and how determined they are, and, you know, that is incredible. And they've got a fantastic team of physios behind them that, you know, that work in so much detail that I think a lot of riders sort of don't realize. And again, you know, a lot of able-bodied riders that I look at and I go, gee, you know, you're a bit crooked in the hips. You know, I can see one hip, excuse me, one hip is higher than the other, or you're really tight sort of like in that groin area, in that thigh. You know, you need to do some stretches. You need to become more supple around the hip area. You know, you need to do some more strength training, core fitness training. And they look at me and go, oh, but, you know, I'm busy. You know, I'm working all day. And I'm going, well, yeah, but, you know, it always depends how much you want to get out. You have to also put in.
That's a very, I think that's a really great point to make. You know, we kind of expect amazing results on very small amount of hours that we're putting into it.
Most riders see their horse as the athlete. But the reality is that a horse can only be as good as the rider who rides it. So, you know, the athlete has to be both horse and rider, and, you know, very common. I mean, I've got a physio, I'm very lucky, I've got a fantastic physio and a chiropractor that are very close to home here. And, you know, I work with both of them. So, you know, the horses get treated and, you know, we get checked. And it's, and I'm not competing, so I'm not doing as much sort of, you know, training kind of on myself as I would have to if I would be still competing. So, you know, there's so much that goes into making a successful combination, you know, which is the physical aspect and the mental aspect before you even, you know, put a foot in the stirrup to get on your horse. And I think that's certainly a part that as riders, you know, the majority of riders, we can improve on. It's not all about sitting on your horse and schooling the horse and working the horse. There is so much that goes on off the horse. And the good thing is that, you know, the you know, riders who are not riding full time, but who have a, you know, a full time separate job and families, there is so much that they can do off the horse while they're sitting on their desk at work.
Well, I actually, on that point, I just got myself a sit stand desk for that exact reason, because I was like, I'm sitting down too much and I need to strengthen my core. And everyone thinks it's quite funny, but that's okay.
I think it's fantastic. Look, even just sitting on a stool or sitting on a football so that you're getting away from those terrible designed office chairs that really just sort of teach us to slouch, to disengage the core and to drop the sternum down. You know, those things are really good first steps that make a massive difference.
My PA has decided that she's going to work me up to a treadmill in front of that desk, and I'm not sure how that's going to go.
I like the idea, you know. You can
I'm not sure about that, but anyway, we'll give it a crack. I've really enjoyed. I think there's some really great things that you've given people here to help them with their writing experience, and I'd like to ask you, just as we wrap up, what is the key takeaway you'd like, the key message that you'd like to leave listeners with?
The most important thing is to become aware of your breathing. You know, if your listeners hear that, and next time they get on their horse, take a moment before they start, you know, before they even take up the rein, and check through their body and check where their breath is. And take a few really deep breaths out until they feel themselves relax and they get the feedback from the horse that the horse is relaxing too. Relaxation is the number one foundational building block where it all starts. And it's probably that one that we not ignore the most, but that we, you know, we don't spend enough time on. We get too busy schooling, but if the horse is not relaxed, you have tension. If the rider is not relaxed, you have tension. You know, tension leads to resistance. It has a negative flowing on aspect into all the work you do with the horse. So in my book, you know, if I spend an extra 10 minutes in the beginning making sure that I'm relaxed, my horse is relaxed before I start schooling, you know, my schooling session always ends far better than if I don't do it.
Fantastic advice. And Tanya, where can people find out more about you?
Look, the best place is to go to my website, which is tanyamitten.com. Tanya with a J, it's that German spelling that throws people out sometimes. And Facebook. So I'm quite active on either my private Tanya Mitten Facebook page or the Equestrian Success Mindset page, which, you know, gives sort of updates on what we're doing with our training center here on the Sunshine Coast. And as that sort of gets bigger, it sort of gives always good information and videos and articles. And yeah, there's a lot of good stuff on that one.
That's fantastic. I'd just like to thank you so much for your time, Tanya. You've been very generous with it. And thank you again. Happy horsing.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I enjoyed that.
Pretty cool, right? I loved so much about that interview that it's going to be really hard for me to stick to my three take-home messages. But here we go. Number one, become aware of the thoughts flying around in your head that aren't serving you, of your breathing, of your body and your muscles. Number two, you get out what you put in. Train both you and your body as well as your horses. Number three, notice the feedback you're getting from your horse. He's a reflection of where you are at that moment. Apply this to your day-to-day life and live better. I hope you got as much out of this as I did. If you like the show, please leave a comment on iTunes. Reviews are really helpful and I really, really appreciate it. And I'm going to be reading out comments and questions and suggestions for new guests. I really would appreciate that as well. For more great horse tips, you can follow me on our Facebook page, Equine Care Clinic. Until next time, may your horsing be great horsing, and goodbye.